Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+, simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. The Time Magazine cover story this week is, I would say, after reading the whole thing, long story by Lauren Sandler, a celebration of a new way of being a woman in America today. It starts with the data on the dropping birth rate in the United States. And kind of celebrates that. And I'm immediately asking myself questions like, how could a dropping birth rate possibly be considered good news? Isn't our economy simply shambling out of a terrible, terrible time? And we're looking to a future where a lot of things remained insecure, and we're thinking that not having children might be a good idea for the future of our nation? That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But of course, I'm no economist. Jennifer Roback Morse is an economist. She joins us to respond to Time Magazine's cover story on the child-free life. She's founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the books Smart Sex and Love and Economics. Jennifer, welcome back.
Hi, Todd.
Here's a line from the Sandler story in Time Magazine that stuck out to me. Women are inventing a new female archetype, one for whom having it all doesn't mean having a baby. How do you respond to that?
Well, it depends on the meaning of all, right? I mean, having it all used to mean that you could have a family and have a career and have an education and all of that. And what women are finding out is that the world of work is built around the person who has no children. And so feminism has been a failure. By feminism, you mean let's make the world more friendly for women and their needs. The only way women can really participate and be a full part of the economy and higher education is if we agree to neuter ourselves and not have children and be like men in that respect. So everything that's distinctive about being a woman, we marginalize and set to the side, and then it looks like we're more free. So that redefinition of having it all is basically a retreat from an authentically pro-woman set of policies and worldviews.
I don't know if I should have been surprised or not, but I was reading the opening paragraphs of the Time Magazine piece where it presented a falling fertility rate in the United States and the West in general as kind of good news for everybody. I'm not an economist. You are. Does a falling birth rate ever really spell good news for a nation that's struggling economically as ours is?
A decline in population has never been good news, right? And this is kind of the first time in human history where you have a voluntary decline in fertility on the scale that we have in the West, in the modern countries. It is pretty typical that as incomes and educations rise and as people become more urban and less rural, that you'll see a decline in birth rate. But we've kind of blasted past all of that, you know, because we've been promoting the idea of childlessness or small families as a good thing. And so there's a whole ideology behind it, in addition to the economic considerations that would, you know, sort of normally be in an organic way promoting small family sizes. We've got this whole ideological baggage on top of it, actively telling people that, you know, the best way of life is a small family and so on and so forth. Economically, to be shrinking the size of the population, can only mean that as the population ages, you have fewer and fewer people available to take care of those who are legitimately dependent, namely the old people and the new babies. You know, so we complain about the sandwich generation in the same breath that we celebrate the decline in fertility and women's ability to have it all. And that's what is simply incoherent and makes no sense.
The framework for the entire article is choice. Women are choosing.
Yeah.
Choosing, it's over and over again, probably most used verb in the entire thing. Women are choosing not to have children. Set that in its proper context. What is it really talking about?
Well, you know, it's a new thing in human history to say that we're going to choose whether to become parents or not. It used to be that if you're going to choose to not be a parent, what that meant is that you would choose not to be sexually active. So what's new in the modern world here is that you are entitled to unlimited sexual activity without there ever being a baby. That's what's new in the modern world. That's what's unprecedented in human history. And so we're treating sex as if it's a normally sterile activity. And we're building the whole society around the premise that sex is a sterile activity. If sex doesn't make babies, failed contraception is what causes babies, you know. So that's being institutionalized. And this article by Time Magazine, basically you should see that as a piece of agitprop, agitation and propaganda designed to cultivate the idea that sex is normally a sterile activity. That's the unstated premise behind the whole choice paradigm. And the other thing I think we should see is that traditionally in the Christian West, people viewed every child as a gift from God, as an irreplaceable, unique gift from God. Every single person who's ever walked the earth was created by God and given to the world by God as an act of love. No matter what crazy things your parents might have done, your human parents could be doing all kinds of crazy things. But in point of fact, God loved every one of us into existence. That's a core belief of Christianity. Now, so that view that you're a gift is the foundation of why it is that we have rights, why it is that we have human dignity, why we have freedom and choice in the first place. As the foundation is that we're a gift from God. Now what we're saying is that every person is a choice of their mother. So you're either a problem to get rid of if you don't want a baby, or you are an object to acquire through infertility treatment and purchase of a variety of services. You're an object or a commodity to acquire if your mother does happen to want one. So the difference between being a choice and being a gift is the difference between being a slave or an object and the difference between that and being a free person with full human dignity. And people writing this Time Magazine article understand that there are high stakes involved in celebrating childlessness. That's why they go to the trouble of doing it. But they do not understand, I think, the long-run ramifications of what they're really advocating here. Just like I think people who said we need abortion in 1973 had no idea where this was going to end up. You know, they thought they were letting people have abortion for rape and incest. They had no idea how many would be performed and why and the ramifications it would have on society. Same thing here. Making a child a choice has long-term ramifications for how we view ourselves in relation to others, how we view ourselves in relation to God, how we view ourselves in relation to all of creation. You know, and so that's why I think it's so important that Christians read an article like that and read it seriously. Don't just blow it off and say, well, they're idiots. They're very smart idiots, right? They know exactly what they're talking about and why they think it's important. If Time Magazine thinks it's important, you need to think it's important.
Lest we be misunderstood here, speak to the issue of the fact that this isn't just women in a vacuum making choices or deciding not to have kids. Men are compliant in the falling fertility rate as well. Men are compliant in the fact that you mentioned before that, as you said, the world of work is built around people who have no children. Speak to that, if you would.
Well, yes, men, in my observation about men, there are many men who are good fathers and good husbands who are good father and husband material, but they don't realize it until they're 35 and until they're actually doing it, that in their 20s, and certainly in their teens, they think, oh, my gosh, I'm not ready for this. Oh, my gosh, I'm not good enough for this. You know, I'm in a serious relationship. I love you. I care about you. But, no, we're not ready to have kids yet, you know. And so the man will be the one quite often who's dragging his feet and saying, no, we're not ready. I'm not ready. Let's put it off. And by the way, I'm immature, and you can see I'm immature, and so I'm not going to grow up. And you certainly don't want to have a child with an immature schmuck like me. So forget it. You know. So the whole trend here is towards postponing of adulthood and assuming full adult responsibility. And rather than the culture coming around and saying, hey, you know, come on, you're 30, you're old enough, you're ready, let's get on with it. Instead of the culture doing that, the culture's coming around saying, oh, well, whatever, you know, and it doesn't help. You know, young people are not getting sensible guidance about this matter to see that, in point of fact, you can grow into the role of husband and father and be a better man for it. This is what I hear and see quite regularly in my work, Todd, is people telling me they really wish that they had started sooner. They really wish they hadn't put it off so long. But they're really grateful that their wives dragged them kicking and screaming into parenthood, into fatherhood, because it turned out to be good for them. So that's the cost, in my opinion, of a story like the one in Time magazine, acting like, you know, it's the individual's choice, and so therefore we can't say anything critical about the individual's choice. Well, what that misses is that Time magazine itself is creating a paradigm that shapes people's choices, and they're doing it with very deliberate ideological purposes in mind, and then hiding behind the mantra of choice without ever asking whether some choices might in fact be better than others.
With only about 30 seconds here, Jennifer, make that case. What are men and women missing out on by not having children? About 30 seconds.
Well, they're missing the entering into the whole realm of self-giving, of complete self-giving. And I hesitate to say this because I'm sure there are listeners who are infertile and who would desperately like to have children, who would desperately like to enter into that. But the fact is, the people who are choosing deliberately to sidestep that whole world are doing something quite different from the person who is involuntarily infertile, you know, that they're missing out on the realm of the gift of self in the deepest possible way, of having your body engaged in giving life to another person. That's what the infertile person longs for and cannot have, and that's why it's kind of a bitter pill to see people who are deliberately thwarting their own fertility for reasons that, you know, when you really come down to it at the end of the day, don't really amount to all that much.
Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, author of the book Smart Sex and Love in Economics. You can find out more about the Ruth Institute under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Thanks, Jennifer.
Thanks, Todd.
When we come back, we're going to talk about women in combat with Lieutenant Colonel Robert McGinnis. He's written a great book called Deadly Consequences, How Cowards Are Pushing Women into Combat. Stay tuned.
One more baby's all right by me. We'll just add another limb to the family tree.
We're giving away two audio DVDs of the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. That's almost 8 hours of teaching. Here's how you can win. Find the Issues Etc. podcast at the iTunes Store. Click Ratings and Reviews and write a review. Then send the text of your review to contest@issuesetc.org. The two listeners with the best reviews will receive the audio DVD of the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. We'll announce the winners on Labor Day.
Steadfast Lutherans, people who believe the traditional Lutheran preaching, liturgy, and hymnody continue to deliver Christ crucified for sinners today. The Reformation attempted to return the Church's focus on what we do for God back to a focus on what God does for us, that Christ died for our sins in accordance with the Scriptures. Some things never change. The gospel is still under attack from inside and outside the Church. To see how Lutheran doctrine and practice preserve the gospel, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
Talk radio for the Christian worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Messiah Lutheran, Seattle, Washington. Grace Lutheran, McPherson, Kansas. St. Paul's Lutheran, Bridgeport, Nebraska. Our Savior Lutheran, Raleigh, North Carolina. St. Paul Lutheran, Hancock, Maryland. Messiah Lutheran, Keller, Texas, St. John's Lutheran, Maple Grove, Minnesota, Grace Lutheran, Parker, Colorado, and Our Redeemer Lutheran, Harrington, Kansas. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. Issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.